Jeffrey Donaldson's conviction last week marks one of the most extraordinary falls from grace in Northern Ireland's political history. For years, he was a dominant voice in unionism and a leading advocate of conservative Christian values. Now, as the courts prepare to sentence him for historic child sexual abuse, a wider reckoning is underway. Questions are being asked about what was known inside political circles, whether concerns were acted upon, and how one of the country's most powerful politicians remained at the centre of public life for so long. In this episode, we explore the political fallout, the unanswered questions, and the challenges that now face Northern Ireland's institutions. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and joining me to discuss the fallout is Alison Morris, crime correspondent and columnist with the Belfast Telegraph. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, the conviction last week has been described as one of the biggest political shocks in Northern Ireland in decades. Why has this case had such an impact, Alison?
Well, I suppose if you go back, I mean, I stood in that court as Jeffrey Donaldson was found guilty, not just once, but 18 times of 18 different counts. And in my 26 years as a journalist, I think in terms of political stories, it's the biggest story that I had ever covered. I think it's because of when this happened. We're talking the most heinous of crimes, child sex abuse, including rape. You know, horrendous crimes, but we're talking someone who was the leader of the DUP, the most dominant unionist party at this time, and someone who at that time would have been at the height of his political powers, could have walked through the doors of 10 Downing Street at any time. Remember, the DUP were front and centre of those Brexit negotiations in terms of what was and wasn't going to happen with the border in Ireland, in terms of regulatory alignment and their opposition to a lot of those Brexit negotiations. He was someone who, at that time of his arrest, which was in March 2024, was flying high on the back of having secured what they called the Securing the Union Deal, now being called by many unionists who opposed to the Donaldson Deal, because you can see what inference that draws from that. But, you know, in that march, at the end of those two very brave complainants made their statements to police in the first week in March. He was arrested then in April. But on St. Patrick's Day, he'd been over in Washington, hobnobbing with the great and good. You know, this is a man who mixed with presidents and prime ministers. And as you said, the DUP throughout its history, since its formation by the Reverend Ian Paisley, was fundamentalist Christian and Presbyterian. And they preached, they didn't just talk about politics, but they preached from the pulpit. Ian Paisley himself would have called alcohol the devil's buttermilk. They were completely against any changes to the law in terms of same-sex marriage. Some members of the DUP called homosexuality an abomination. Jeffrey Donaldson himself called it sinful. They opposed any changes to any abortion rights. They just recently opposed changes to any laws that would allow sex education within schools. These are sort of, their politics was shaped by religion and by that free Presbyterian ethos. And there, for a man such as Jeffrey Donaldson to be convicted not just of those crimes, but then first to also find out that he is living this second life, this hedonistic and some might argue a moral life in London as well. So in court, we heard about how he had had an affair, he admitted to. He had had an affair during his marriage. Remember, these are the people who oppose same-sex marriage because they said it damaged the sanctity of marriage. And he's admitting to having affairs. Affairs aren't illegal. But at the same time, too, if you're going to preach morals to people, you have to live that. And all of that came out in court. And it's caused, I suppose, the aftermath of that, because initially, and rightly so, the focus was on the two victims in this case and those terrible, terrible offences that he had been found guilty of, and the fact that the now leader of unionism is currently in McGabbery, a prison that sits right in the heart of his former Langan Valley constituency. But what has happened since is now the fallout is who knew what within the DUP and who knew what within the PSNI, the police, the intelligence services. Was this double lifestyle known? Was Jeffrey Donaldson compromised as a person because of it? And what, I suppose, does it say about the politics of here? And also coming under criticism are journalists as well, and what wasn't reported and could have been reported or should have been reported before now.
So he built his political career, he built his image around these conservative Christian values, as you say, opposing same-sex marriage, projecting the image of a person who of personal rectitude. And then we had the allegations, as you say, in the court case. And then we had further allegations in the BBC Spotlight programme, which went out on Friday night, which really focused on Donaldson's private conduct. What was claimed in that programme?
Well, in that programme, there was quite a lot came out, including now, and we bear in mind these are political opponents now of Jeffrey Donaldson, one-time colleagues, now political opponents, Jim Wells, who left the Democratic Unionist Party and joined the TUV, that sort of even more ultra-conservative right-wing branch of unionism, and Ian Paisley, the son of the founder of the DUP, who had lost his seat. And I think it's easy enough to say there's no love lost between him and Jeffrey Donaldson. Ian Paisley's allegations were that Jeffrey Donaldson had a problem with drink, had a problem with alcohol, and would often get drunk in very public situations in which he was meant to be representing the party. He said that he'd been inappropriate with a female member of the DUP during one such trip, and on another trip, and this is just probably the strangest thing I I've ever heard. I didn't expect to hear it on a Spotlight programme.
On a trade mission on the other side of the world, in Beijing, getting so blindingly drunk that he actually projectile vomited over the mayor of Beijing. I was like, what on earth? So those things were happening. But I mean, that's not criminal to be not able to hold your drink and all the rest of it, but to have this pious hypocrisy, there was those certain glimpses.
And then we had, other allegations made, and we heard from a very senior police officer who said he was working in London in MI5 buildings. And if anyone knows where MI5 is on the river in London, it's very close to Westminster, where Jeffrey Donaldson would have been three, four days a week during his time as an MP. And that him and a colleague were out, they were having something to eat, and they witnessed Jeffrey Donaldson walk in to a gay sauna. And that, I suppose, is one of those allegations or rumours that has surrounded Jeffrey Donaldson for a long time since the expenses scandal, exposed, as we know, at that time many years ago by journalists. And in that, it showed that Jeffrey Donaldson had been getting paid for a few videos or films during stays in his hotel. And there was always allegations that they were videos of a gay nature. He denied that. I think that he said when he was asked by a BBC journalist what he was watching, he said he was watching The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
In terms of that young woman who made that allegation towards Ian Paisley Jr. that Jeffrey Donaldson had acted inappropriately with her, what happened to that allegation?
That allegation, he says he passed on to the then party leader, very brief party leader, in terms of Edmund Poots. Edmund Poots took control of the DUP for all of 3 weeks at one stage before he was ousted internally, and Jeffrey Donaldson took his place. But I mean, even that, when we look back at that, you could see that there was problems. Jeffrey Donaldson, seemed like a safer pair of hands than Edmund Poots, and yet members of the party weren't willing to vote him in as leader. So there was clearly, rumours or at least something known about his very risky private life. And he said he told Edmund Poots approached the woman and she didn't want to take it any further, and he said he left it at that. So what is happening now is the DUP are calling an outside person in who is going to do an independent review of their safeguarding measures and what they do. And every party, every political party will have its own safeguarding policies in terms of the behaviour of not just elected members, but just members of that party. And so there's going to be a review of that and a report into that. And that is supposed to tell us who knew what when. But I mean, I think there's a lot of, soul searching for the DUP at this time. And I was minded about 5 or 6 years ago having a conversation with a senior member of the DUP who said, at some point, we're going to have to leave, to preach into the minister on a Sunday and get away from interfering in people's family lives and concentrate on the politics. And when I think back now, those words that he said, he was clearly alluding to the fact that there was a lot going on that was hypocritical in nature in terms of what some of their policies were compared to the behaviour of some of their members.
Look, I think, Mog, the DUP have had some significant political crises in the last 20 years. This blows them all out of the water, and by some distance. I think that this is damaging to the point of potentially beyond repair.
But it's got to be deeply, deeply damaging, Alison, to the DUP, given the party's own religious and moral identity, that this culture exists where this sort of complaint, this allegation, this rumour about Geoffrey Donaldson was still in his existence, and yet he's voted in to be the leader of the party.
Yeah, and you know, and I think what we need to be clear as well, that had this, if this was just normal political party, Geoffrey Donaldson, if he wanted, you know, to go in and get drunk and be loudish, that was for the party to deal with. If Geoffrey Donaldson was a bisexual man, that was also his personal business and his private business, and not for, for people to judge. But it's the hypocritical nature of it. It's that he was preaching morality to other people while also living this very double life. So it has, it's already caused problems, because remember that Leggan Valley seat that Geoffrey Donaldson held, and held for, I think it was up to 27 years as just as both a member of the Ulster Unionist Party, and then for the majority of that time as a member of the DUP, they lost that seat. They lost that seat to Alliance in the last general election. So it already has had an impact on the party, and it's likely to impact them further, because there's two things that they can do now. They can move away from their past, which is living, you know, their politics being shaped by evangelical Christian views, but that will alienate a part of their electorate. Or they can continue on with that and constantly be accused of being hypocrites, which will also alienate a different part of their electorate. So it's a very, very difficult path going forward.
As you say, they have launched their own review. Do you think that is going to restore public confidence, or is there a stronger case for a really independent external inquiry into the party?
Well, I have heard rumours, but not confirmation, of who it is going to be carrying out that review. And it's someone who has a lot of experience in child safeguarding. And we'll see what it produces. But there are, you know, obviously people saying this is just a DUP marking its own homework and trying to save its own skin. And, you know, the fact too that we do have two former members speaking out, but they're former members, and they're speaking out now that Geoffrey Donaldson has no reputation left to protect, and they know that there's no risk to themselves. What we really need to know is what current members know, what they're willing to say, and who's willing to step forward and say, this is what I knew. And there was a culture in the party that made it me unable to come and say this before, because I think that clearly, especially for some of the female members of that party, maybe that there has been an idea that they were unable to speak out, and if they had, that it would have been their political career that would have suffered, not the person who they were pointing the finger at.
The independent MLA Doug Beattie, he's also called for an investigation into how any intelligence held by the police, the PSNI, was handled. So what allegation is he making against them, and what has their response been to this call for an inquiry?
So he has asked for the ombudsman, and the ombudsman, the police ombudsman, looks at police misconduct and wrongdoing. And, you know, as far as I could see as a journalist covering that court case, there was nothing that the police did that treated Geoffrey Donaldson any different than they would have treated anyone else. He was treated no better nor worse than anyone else who was facing similar allegations would have been. The other thing then, which is a different question, is, well, what did the intelligence agencies know? So remember Geoffrey Donaldson, as well as all his other, he was a knight of the realm. And, you know, you imagine you have to be vetted in some way before you get that particular accolade. Mm. He was also a privy councillor, which is a sort of ancient sort of role that's meant to be an advisor to the monarch. Now, that all sounds something that's, you know, of a bygone age, but there's actually a different role to the privy councillor, which means that they do get access to intelligence briefings. And someone living a lifestyle like Geoffrey Donaldson could have been open to compromise, let's face it, by foreign agencies or people who wanted to blackmail him in terms of his lifestyle. So you would imagine that would have red flagged the intelligence agencies. And what did they know? And did they, why wasn't it acted on or brought out? And was it used in some way, which is what Jim Allister of the TUV is alleging, and the NIO, the Northern Ireland office, are denying this. He is alleging that this was used as some sort of leverage to try and get Geoffrey Donaldson to do that deal on Brexit, on the sort of readapted Windsor framework, which he claims left the sea border in place, and Geoffrey Donaldson came out and sold that deal as having removed the sea border. The NIO have denied that and said it's an abhorrent allegation to make.
They said it's absolute nonsense. haven't they?
They have. And you know, it, in the end, Jeffrey Donaldson was charged. So he clearly wasn't doing any dirty deal to get a, you know, for him to get a deal over the line and for him to be given some sort of amnesty because he's currently sitting in McGabbery. I suppose maybe the allegation now is, well, did they leave him in place for longer than maybe he should have because he was the best person to get the deal? But look, all of that is something that I don't think the story is going to go away. I mean, that spotlight had some pretty jaw-dropping revelations, let's face it. There's more to come. You know, the courts are getting into the summer recess now, but come the autumn, Jeffrey Donaldson will appear back in court in Uri again to be sentenced and to find out how long he's going to stay in prison. He may also lodge an appeal, and we'll not know that because he can't lodge the appeal until after the sentencing. I think it's been indicated to, that he is thinking of lodging an appeal, but that can be done, I think, any time up to, I think it's 21 or 28 days after he's sentenced. And so that will happen then. And that means that every time he appears in court, every time this story is mentioned, this comes up again and again and again into the DUP. That is a massive headache. And they must know this is not going to go away. And, you know, I think that we've found as journalists who have covered political stories, come back, you know, maybe a couple of decades, you know, if you look back even at political stories going back much further than that, it's the cover-up that gets you. You know, if the DUP must know that coming clean, putting all this out into the open, and saying this is what happened, it shouldn't have happened, and this is what we're going to do to make it better is the best way to fix the problem. But will that happen? You know, that's what remains to be seen.
I have to say, I think that allegation by Jim Allister that the UK government had been aware of compromising information about Jeffrey Donaldson during the negotiations over the Windsor framework and used it to manipulate him is pretty wild.
It is. And I mean, I suppose we've seen, you know, governments do worse things in the past, but it is pretty, I suppose, far-fetched. And the reason why is not because I don't believe that governments aren't up to sort of political manipulation, but because Jeffrey Donaldson wanted to do that thing. You know, he wanted to have power restored to Stormont. He wanted to have that devolution back up and running. He wouldn't have taken much persuasion. He certainly didn't need blackmail to do it. And, you know, there was a meeting between one of the complainants and the PSNI and someone from the church's safeguarding officer a year before. They say that no names were mentioned, but they were able to jigsaw identify and work out who they were talking about at that time. So people in the PSNI did know over a year before he was actually arrested. But what was done with that, I'm not sure how tight that was kept. But there are questions for all sorts of people. And then again, and we haven't even touched on the role of the church, the Presbyterian church in particular, in all of this and how those complaints were dealt with going back a very long time, because both of those complainants had dealings with the church in terms of making disclosures.
In terms of journalists' role in all of this, you say there's questions to be answered to Alison. Do you think journalists could have uncovered more sooner, or were there simply too many legal and evidential barriers in place that stopped them from reporting on some of this conduct?
I'm willing to accept any criticism that's thrown at the media, but I'm also, I think, and I don't want to bore people with technicalities, but in 2013, the UK, England and Wales changed their libel and defamation laws, and that made it more difficult for people to take vexatious or malicious or slap orders, as you call them, to try and prevent stories coming out. And that was to protect the powerful. It wasn't to protect the ordinary person. And Northern Ireland has repeatedly voted, our legislators, our politicians have repeatedly voted against updating our libel laws to make them the same as the rest of the UK. Therefore, it is much more difficult to take a case to court in England and Wales because you have to prove very, very serious defamation to your character and harm to your reputation. It's very easy in Northern Ireland. There's nothing done to stop what they call libel tourism in Northern Ireland. And also some of the defences that exist in terms of public interest we don't have here to protect us. So the people who are most protected by our outdated libel laws are the people who are making those laws. And they have voted against reform of those laws, which would have been much easier to expose the double life of Jeffrey Donaldson. But then we also had things like the Leveson Inquiry. And look, people now that with hindsight are saying, well, why didn't the media do X, Y, and Z? If we were to go back to the days of the News of the World, the days before Leveson, before phone hacking and all of that, and how those very salacious stories were put over the line, how they were put into print, put into the public domain, that sort of free-for-all Wild West of journalism, that harmed everyone. It harmed the reputation of journalists for a start. It harmed the public interest and public trust in journalism. But it also wasn't news. It was gossip and it was malicious. And it not only, okay, you can point to how many sort of famous or rich people that it helped expose, it also destroyed the lives of so many ordinary people. And there's a reason why we had the Leveson Inquiry. There's a reason why I have to abide by rules that are now in place in terms of invasion of privacy. And they're very strict. There's a strong public interest barrier that I have to get over before I can invade someone's privacy.
Where do you think this is going to go now, Alison? Like, I'm assuming that there's going to be more rumours, more stories that are going to emerge over the next few days, weeks and months. And we will, as we said, have that investigation by the DUP. But what else is going to happen, do you think?
Well, as I said, Geoffrey Donaldson no longer has a reputation, so it is literally a free-for-all on him in terms of the DUP. They have a lot of thinking to do in how they're going to handle this and how they're going to try and repair damage. Some say they're repaired, you know, this is irreparable and they can never come back from this. I don't know whether or not they believe that they have faith that this review is going to do enough to try and claw back some sort of public support. There is an election next year that they're going to have to fight in the middle of this. I think they're going to hope that they can get a lot of this out of the way before then and then try and rebuild that support. They've lost that Leggett Valley seat and I can't see any circumstances when they'll win that back anytime soon in the current climate. The Alliance Party now hold that seat. And there are other issues, I suppose, for other political parties too, because, you know, they, in terms of power, things were run in the past, I suppose, where, you know, politicians went off on these trade trips or trade missions or, you know, visits to the White House, and once they were off duty, behaved in whatever way they wanted. Those days, I think, are well and truly gone, and they're going to have to consider their elected reps be told, you know, that your public and private persona have to match up. You know, they can't be starkly different in the way that Geoffrey Donaldson's was for such a long period of time, because the public expect that the person they're voting for is the person. You know, and that it's not a facade, a fake person that's put forward for election, while behind the scenes, the person lives a very different life. And then I think that we're in real, real danger of moving away from what actually happened here. You know, for 4 weeks, I listened to two women upend their lives, and I mean upend them. I mean, they had to go through what was said in court was the worst aspects of their childhood in order to bring down and get a conviction for a very, very, very powerful man. And I'm sure a lot of people will have said to them, oh, this will never happen, you know. You can't get someone like Geoffrey Donaldson convicted in a court in a land where he's a privy councillor in and out of the realm. And they, I think, should be front and centre of any thoughts as we go forward. The end of the day, all of this, and Geoffrey Donaldson, you know, getting drunk and gay saunas and relationships with men and affairs with behind his wife's back and all of that, while all of that makes for interesting copy, it's not the main story here. The main story is this man is a child predator. He's a paedophile and he's convicted of that. And the only reason he's convicted of that is because two women went, sat in court and got evidence against him.
Yeah, absolutely. Alison, the trauma those women went through should not be lost in all of this. Well, that's it from News Talk Daily today. We'll be back with another News Talk Daily tomorrow morning. Until then, take care. Bye.